listening to Muslimish Freethinkers, a podcast dedicated to fostering conversations on matters of faith and disbelief.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Muslimish's ongoing celebration of Darwin Day, celebration of recognition of the importance of evolutionary science to our worldviews. Muslimish's mission is to create a safe, supportive, and open-minded environment for the exchange of thoughts and ideas among current and former Muslims, to foster a pluralistic society that respects the rights of all individuals to live according to their conscience and to abolish blasphemy and apostasy laws across the globe. Today, we welcome speaking on Islamic creationism, the Turkish model, Professor Taner Edis. Taner Edis is a Turkish-American physicist and skeptic. He's a professor of physics at Truman State University. He received his BS from Boyazici University in Turkey and his MA and PhD from Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Edis is the author of several books on creationism, religion, and science. And he's also a fellow of the Center for Inquiry's Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. Please welcome Dr. Edis.
Hi. So let's see. Is it working in the sense that do you see my screen right now that I'm sharing?
Yeah, we can see it.
Okay, great. So I'll basically start going through it. So basically what I want to say is that very often creationism is thought to be an American thing. Because particularly in the United States, there's some large public support that you find for creationism. And for example, in a Gallup poll since 1980, there's typically about 45% young Earth creationism supporters pretty constantly. But the thing about the United States is that creationism, intelligent design, they're pretty much unacceptable in the intellectual high culture. There's very little penetration of creationism into public education. It tends to be confined to the informal and private realms. And if you look at the sort of industrialized post-Christian West, the support for evolution, which is the blue lines in a graph like this, tend to be pretty strong, while creationism, the red responses in these polls, tend to be very much in a minority position. But if you look at the bottom of the charts over there, in the United States, there's about a 50-50 split. But interestingly enough, the only Muslim country included in that list, in that poll that year, was Turkey. And you see that in Turkey, the majority is clearly in favor of creation rather than evolution. Indeed, if you look at some of the data that the Pew Center has from 2014 and 2015, Muslims are a group that particularly stand out for resisting, especially notions about human evolution. And if you look at it country by country, if you're looking at the particularly large population modernizing Muslim countries, there is actually a fairly strong support for a more creationist view and a particularly rejection of notions of human evolution. So the reasons are fairly straightforward. Evolution challenges conservative conceptions of religion. And creationists, of course, are, since they're common enough in the population, they certainly accept some expertise, including scientific expertise. But the idea is that creationists also try to affirm a kind of populist idea of religious politics and much of the technology, in particular, in the modern world. So a signature aspect of creationism in the United States is that Protestant creationists in particular are very much pro-technology, pro-market, very much in the sort of, in many ways, the mainstream of conservative politics. Much the same thing often happens with Muslim creationists as well. Nonetheless, there are a variety of responses that I see when I look at Muslim responses to evolution. It very much differs from country to country. For example, Iran. Iran, a theocratic government and everything like that. But by and large, in education, the Iranians very forthrightly tend to accept non-human evolution. They tend to finesse human evolution a bit more, but non-human evolution, they tend to have no problem with it. Saudi Arabia, which is more of the sort of Sunni fundamentalist kind of country, by and large, they reject evolution almost completely. And it's very much a kind of, it goes against a religion, I don't accept it, that settles it kind of view. In Pakistan, the situation is complicated. In Pakistan science textbooks, you will very often find evolution in textbooks, but the discussion of evolution would be, say, bookended by, say, verses in the Quran to kind of create the impression that everything is religiously fine and everything like that. In Egypt, the situation is different yet again. In Egypt, in science education, in secondary schools, evolution very straightforwardly appears, at least in the sense of common descent. But there's also a lot of passive resistance, both among Egyptian science teachers and Egyptian students, to the very notion of evolution. So even the very idea of evolution is complicated sometimes in a Muslim context. In this way, I flashed a number of polling results about Muslim attitudes toward evolution, particularly human evolution. But it's actually not clear very often when a Muslim population affirms evolution, say that they're okay with evolution, it's not entirely clear necessarily what they say, in that when evolution is accepted among Muslims, this tends not to be the evolution in the same way that biologists understand it. It tends to be evolution, which is a more sort of a divinely guided process. And indeed, you can find many religious scholars and religious thinkers in the Muslim world who would accept evolution for non-human animals, and they think of it not as a kind of a variation selection process like biologists think about it, but they think of it as kind of a divinely guided process. And there's even attempts to reinterpret certain verses in the Quran in a way that affirms a more evolutionary historical view of biology. Now, there's an interesting question that might come up over here. Why Muslim creationism particularly? In the sense that, yes, some distance to evolution for religious reasons is understandable. But most often when you see religious rejection of evolution, and this is goes for different religions, not just Islam, it tends to be more of a passive rejection. But in some pockets in the Muslim world, and particularly in the Turkish example that I'm going to highlight in a little bit, it's no longer passive rejection. It's more of creating a very elaborate pseudoscience. So there must be something attractive to going beyond just doubting that evolution is true, going full bore creationist. There must be something attractive about this as a way of harmonizing traditional religion and affirming modern technology. Now, the historical need to adopt Western science has been fairly obvious for the past couple of centuries in the Muslim world. No matter what Muslim country you're talking about, has faced the notion that the West, the colonial powers of the West, had a very strong technological advantage over the Muslim powers. And of course, technology has translated into military and commercial power, and therefore science, which undergirds that technology, had to be imported. And creationism in this context could be a way of affirming both science on one hand and traditional beliefs on the other. And it's a way of creating a less kind of Western image of science. Very often in Muslim countries, among Muslim intellectuals, there's been a theme of take only what is necessary from the West, but be careful to try and preserve the traditional religious culture. Now, there are mostly historical reasons that undergirds what I see as creationist movements in the Muslim world. And I think Turkish history is in particular very, very illustrative about this. Now, I come from Turkey, and if you were talking about the mid-20th century, Turkey used to be considered the most secular Muslim country. Today, you would have more difficulty maybe presenting a view like that. It's largely been in a process of gradual re-Islamization for the past 4 or 5 decades. And Turkey is also a country where creationism is very strong and very successful these days. So in the mid-century, image of Turkey might have been something like this, where women, for example, would have got the vote in Turkey earlier than most Western European countries and so forth. But today, the image of Muslim Turkey is going to be more like more devout women with more headscarves rather than without. Now, the history of creationism and doubt about evolution in Turkey goes back to Ottoman times. The Ottoman Empire, as it was in the process of collapse and trying to save what it could from the Western colonial powers, there was very much the idea that they needed to borrow the technology of the Europeans, but they also needed to guide against corrupting foreign culture influences. And especially in the late 19th century, this was a time when Darwinian ideas hit the scene in Europe and was very often tied to materialist philosophies tied to science. And of course, these came to the Ottoman Empire, were translated into languages of the Ottoman Empire by some extreme Westernizer in particular. And immediately, evolution among the Ottomans became entangled in controversy over belief and unbelief, materialism versus religion, and so forth. And so the early response to Darwin and evolution very much was a debate over materialism and so forth. There's some other details as well. Western Protestants sometimes, in their process of trying to reach Arab Christians, they sometimes were a channel for Darwinian ideas to make it into the Middle East. But by and large, really, in the 19th century, evolution was mostly ignored. It was denounced by a few religious scholars as an offense to religion, but it was only accepted by a few radical secularizers. Even Muslim modernists tended to stay away from evolutionary ideas. Where evolution really comes to the fore in Turkey is really in the early 20th century, because after the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, Turkey conducted what was perhaps the most radical secularist experiment in the Muslim world. In the 1920s and 30s, there was essentially a cultural revolution, trying to westernize in almost all aspects of life. And at that time in Turkey, Darwinian evolution very straightforwardly appeared in the state science curriculum. And this didn't really attract, interestingly enough, a lot of religious opposition, mainly because these times were so disastrous from the point of view of religious conservatives that evolution in education was only a minor offense when compared to much more serious injuries against religion. And at that time, the more officially supported religious scholars were pretty much forced to take a line that evolution had to be compatible at some level with the true religion. However, the conservatives, religious conservatives, really never went away. And in the 1950s, after the revolutionary generation essentially exhausted itself, the conservatives took power again. They built in Turkey a parallel education system to the secular education. And this was also a time when some very grassroots, often starting in the provinces, modernizing religious movements, such as that led by Said Nursi, these start to appear. And they're important because they are the religious movements that form the basis for creationism in the coming decades. But by and large, until it comes to the 1970s in Turkey, it's not like people accepted evolution necessarily. I mean, people were still mostly devout, religious, and everything like that, but it was more of a passive resistance to evolution. There wasn't much creationism actually going on. When the creationism appears, that's when things start getting a little bit more interesting. In the 1970s, you really start getting more serious Islamist-style politics in Turkey. And for the first time, Islamist political parties in Turkey started becoming part of conservative coalition governments. And opposition to evolution became a kind of a culture war theme, as a kind of an indirect way of opposing the official secularism of the country at the time. The Nur movement, as a religious movement, was very closely connected to it, and really has been associated very strongly with creationism ever since then, and it remains one of the strongest religious movements in Turkey at the moment. Interestingly enough, in the 1980s, this influence of the religious movements that supported creationism translated into official influence. Particularly in 1980, there was a military coup in Turkey, sort of similar in its effects in some ways to the military takeovers in Pakistan. They basically took a much more religious policy. The cultural policy was known as Turkish Islamic Synthesis. And Islamists actually shared power, particularly they were very influential in the Ministry of Education in the time. And at that point, they actually made connections with American creationists. Creation started appearing in Turkish secondary education through translations from English creationist literature in the United States. And creationist paragraphs started appearing in Turkish science textbooks in secondary education. So in the 1990s, it was actually creation versus evolution disputes were a really occasional well-known feature of public debate in on TV programs, in newspapers, all over the place. And the degree of creationism in education depended on which party was in power, really, and who controlled the Ministry of Education. And there was also a concerted effort by religious movements, often connected to the Nur movement, of creating a sort of a cadre of devout elites, particularly educated in applied science, lots of engineers and medical people and so forth. And also, they started making room in academic institutions in Turkey. In, say, the 1960s and 70s, you really wouldn't have had much creationism in Turkish academic departments, but in the 1990s, it started becoming a really common thing. In 1997, the army forced the Islamists out of power again, and they tried to sort of, too little too late, try to impose secularism again. Textbooks become neutral once again between creation and evolution rather than endorsing creationism. But a very interesting development appeared in 1997 to about 2000 or so. This sort of private sector version of creationism appeared, and very much a media-driven form of creationism, often under the name of Harun Yahya. And many other observers in other Muslim countries have noticed that the Adnan Oktar Harun Yahya literature has become a commonly available creationist literature in other countries, not just Turkey. And it's just a massive amount of stuff. There was these people had a lot of financial resources, and they often made creationist material freely available to anybody. And everything was freely available, download on the web and everything like that. And so the Harun Yahya enterprise was very curious. Creationism was only one of their obsessions, but it was a central story. Adnan Oktar, whose picture I include over here, was always very controversial among Muslims, by the way. He was known in Turkey as something like a cult leader. But he borrowed from Christian creationists, added more traditional Islamic themes, and a really interesting mishmash that he made in creationism. And it was known when he was most active in about year 2000, 2010 or so, for using media very well. And if you, again, notice this picture of Adnan Oktar, he really tried very much to project this modern image, religious, but at the same time, successful in business and in the modern world and so forth. That was important for the creationists. They were very much modern Muslims. Indeed, the religious movements supporting creationism in Turkey have been very much non-traditional. Their authority structure has been very different. They have been very much oriented towards business and capitalism and technology and so forth. And they're not traditionalist in other way. It's a thoroughly modern sort of movement that we find underneath creationism. And as I sort of mentioned a little bit before, the Harun Yahya style of creationism had ambitions of going global. He became internationally known. His type of creationism penetrated into Indonesian and Malaysian markets, more so than the Middle East. And it tied in with local versions of creationism that was developed in Indonesia and Malaysia. they made themselves known even in Europe and North America with their publicity stunts. And in a book that was published in 2010 in Jordan, for example, Oktar was named one of the 50 most influential Muslims of the time. So he had some influence. But I think if you're looking at creationism in the Muslim world, the Turkish model in particular, it's not so much these sort of flashy cult-like movements like Adnan Oktar are most important. It's really more the who holds the political power that determines what's going on. And since 2002, for the last 20 years, Turkey has been in a process of desecularization with the party in power ever since then. More important than the whole business of the sort of flashy media creationism has been that Islamist politics has been capturing institutions and influencing education, everything like that. Creationism for decades right now has been a staple in Turkish textbooks. It's not like they completely dominate biology textbooks, but there always are paragraphs who mention creationism and endorse creationism. The Ministry of Education has typically been hostile to evolution in Turkey. It remains so. And in the research made about it, it's also been fairly clear that the creationists have been fairly successful in influencing the general public, the undergraduates who are in universities these days and everything. Some of this Turkish creationism made the international news. For example, in 2009, when there were celebrations of the 200th birthday of Darwin, Turkey became notorious for the largest science magazine in Turkey removing Darwin from the cover and putting something else instead due to the head of the Turkish equivalent of the NSF being a very devout engineer who was appointed by the Islamist government. Things really got bizarre, though, after 2015, where you essentially had a failed coup in Turkey rooted in a religious movement that was close to the Nur movement. And essentially, it was sort of a quarrel between different versions of Islamists over power. And after that, the current government in Turkey went on a purge of people who are associated with this rival religious movement. And they intensified their re-Islamization of the country in their cultural policies, and much more drifted towards a kind of a one-man rule by Erdogan, the current president of Turkey. And they favored religious education system over the more secular schools. Indeed, this came to the level that in 2017, they pretty much got rid of evolution. They completely removed evolution from the secondary science curriculum. The reasons they offered was that evolution is supposed to be too controversial, too hard to understand, and so forth. But really, they were gunning for evolution for a long time. And with the coup attempt as a pretext, they got rid of pretty much any opposition, including secular opposition, from higher education. And at the same time, curiously enough, the government moved against Adnan Oktar, the sort of main figure in Turkish creationism. Because by that time, Adnan Oktar had become known for this sort of rather bizarre creationist televangelism. And he had this television channel, and on it, it was famous for having these scantily clad women on all the time who were propagandizing for Adnan Oktar's version of Islam. As you might imagine, many conservative Muslim circles were not very happy about this. And so what happened was that Adnan Oktar ran into trouble with the law. His whole organization was broken, was accused of being a crime network. He's now been convicted, and it seems pretty certain that he's going to die in jail. But even though this sort of media form of creationism is now fallen on hard times, the more institutionalized version of creationism in Turkey is still going strong, particularly in provincial universities in Turkey. And so what has happened is that the Islamists in Turkey have cultivated a more politically reliable, religiously conservative form of expertise, their own expert class. And they particularly created jobs for them in these newly formed universities. And for an example of what the effects of this are, there's a currently ongoing series started in 2018. Every year, they hold an international creationism conference in Turkey with almost entirely Muslim academics from Turkey, but from all around the Muslim world coming up. And it's a fully state-supported affair. So here are a couple of posters from the more recent ones. The last one was in October 2021. And these are all full-blown multi-day large conferences, and they try and make themselves look as scientific as possible. So there is, I would say right now, something of a Turkish model of creationism that has been tried out for decades and is fairly successful in Turkey. Some of this, of the Turkish model, the basic creationism, the rejection of evolution as a kind of popular apologetics, there's a lot in it that might appeal to other conservative Muslim populations globally. But a lot of the details of the Turkish model are really dependent very much on particular Turkish history, the particular religious movements that exist in Turkey and everything like that. So it's not at all clear whether the rest of the Muslim world will learn a lot from the Turkish model, as in the way of supporting an elaborate pseudoscience, whether there will be a takeover of institutions in the same way and everything like that. So really, I'll sort of wind it down. Obviously, there's a political aspect to everything over here. Just as in the United States, creationism is linked to right-wing populist movements. In the United States, this is still excluded from the intellectual high culture from the institutions, even though it's strengthening. In Turkey, however, creationism, right-wing populism, is much more successful in penetrating both the intellectual high culture and the institutions in Turkey. Really, yes, religious beliefs obviously contribute to creationism, but in the institutional details, the political details matter a lot. How we actually respond to it, I'm not exactly very sure. So I'll sort of stop over here, and I'll hope we'll get some questions, but I'll sort of point out that I do have a bunch of books that are related to the topic, and if you want to learn more about the details, I hope you'll take a chance to go to your library and read them. So that's the slideshow, and I will...
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Tanner, for this presentation. The first question I will have for you is, in 2009, there was a survey conducted by the McGill researchers and their international collaborators found that 85% of Indonesian high school students and 86% of Pakistani high school students agreed with the statement that millions of fossils show that life has existed for billions of years and changed over time.
Yeah.
How does that translate into the belief in the acceptance of theory of evolution?
Okay, again, it's fairly ambiguous in the sense that when you're talking about rejection of evolution among Muslims, the complication is what sort of evolution are we talking about? In this sense, are we talking about Darwinian evolution driven by processes like variation and selection? Or are we talking about a version of divinely guided evolution where you can acknowledge that there are relationships of common descent between living forms, perhaps with the exclusion of humans? That has been much more easy for Muslims to accept. The official line of religious scholars in Turkey has usually been that sort of acceptance of a guided form of evolution. So it's very uncertain when you look at polling data from Muslim countries what accepting evolution means. It's a little bit, if you look at surveys, say, for example, in the United States that have been conducted, they have been much more in depth, and they usually have been able to disentangle what people mean about evolution a little bit better. It's very much unknown still in Muslim countries.
Thank you. I want to take some comments from the audience while I prepare that. Suhan, you can go ahead with the next question.
Thanks. Thanks again for the talk, Dr. Idris. I have a question about the emerging sort of synthesis almost in what I noticed in both Islamic as well as Christian apologetics, which is that you could have sort of Adamic exceptionalism is what it's sometimes called. I don't know if you've heard of that, but like, yeah, it's like you have other hominins that have evolved, but then God specially created just Adam and Eve and inserted them into this population, and then they interbred with the other human. They either consider them human or human-like, but not quite there. And then they just interbred with this. Has there been much uptake in Turkey regarding this possibility?
Yes, in the sense that just about every option you can think of for responding evolution, in a country with a large population like Turkey, you're going to find examples of that everywhere. But when you're talking about something like Adamic evolution, this is going to appeal more to populations that are kind of caught in between. They may be coming from a culturally more conservative background, but due to their, say, for example, life experiences in working in modern business and technology sectors, they also feel the pressure of really responding to modern science in a way that is a little bit more sophisticated than just denying it. And varieties of creationism and varieties of trying to make a compromise themselves tend to appeal to people as a way of trying to reestablish a way of a kind of harmony between science and religion. And what people will adopt will depend on a whole bunch of different things, including what kind of depth of commitment they really are looking for. Very often it's fairly superficial.
What's your impression of whether this has arisen independently? Adamic exceptionalism has risen independently in Islamic apologetics, or do you think it was something that's influenced by Christian apologetics? Because they seem to have emerged almost at the same time. I can't tell which came first.
Okay. For one thing, that's a historical question. I can't answer it without really looking at the details. So my first answer is I don't know. On the other hand, it's a question where it could be either, in the sense that the kind of pressures that all monotheistic religions have felt from evolutionary thinking have been very, very similar. And there are a limited number of options that you can follow if you want to produce a kind of an apologetic response. And for all kinds of monotheistic religions, the most important sticking point is going to be the status of humans, much more so than the status of other living forms. And many people will quite independently come up with the idea that, well, maybe humans are an exception in this particular way. It doesn't necessarily mean that they've heard of, say, for example, Catholic ideas that are very similar. People are perfectly capable of coming up with such ideas independently.
Now, a form of convergent.
Almost a convergent in a way, yes.
Yeah, convergent evolution in apologetics, I suppose.
But of course, having said that, once again, my answer has to be I don't know, because it's a matter for a historian to actually find out whether there have been direct intellectual influences between say, Christian theologians and Muslim thinkers about the subject. It's possible, but it's also doesn't necessarily need to be the case.
Thank you.
One note I can add to that, for example, is that in Turkish creationism, after 1980, there started to become a huge Protestant creationist influence in Turkish creationism. But there was creationism before that in Turkey, where the Turkish creationists of the 1970s and so forth, which were far fewer in number, they made up arguments themselves independently of the American creationists, which in some respects are very, very similar. For example, your classic improbability argument. Creationists will often say that, oh, it's so impossible to sort of assemble all these proteins together to make something functional and everything like that. Turkish creationists were also already saying this in the 1970s, without making any references to any Christian sources, any Western sources at all. It's very easy to invent an argument like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a slightly entertaining question. What did Turks think of the Mount Ararat, Noah's Ark, you know, the Christian creationists think they found Noah's Ark in Turkey. What do they think about that?
Curiously enough, I haven't seen much interest in the whole Noah's Ark story among Turkish Muslims. It's not as important in the Quran as it is in the Protestant belief. And they certainly haven't made it an issue in their version of creationism. Turkish creationists tend to stay away from any sort of flood geology, from young earth notions, from really any idea that Noah's flood was something globally, biologically significant or anything like that. So honestly, it looks like they don't care that much. When I talk to Turks about the creationists in the United States, the Protestants who do things like mount expeditions to Mount Ararat and try and look for the Ark and everything like that, they tend to take this as sort of amusing. As in, these American crazies want to spend their money, fine.
Thank you. That's fascinating.
Dr. Tanner, there is an instructor of physics at University of Michigan, Mr. Abbas El-Hajj Ahmed, who's also a Muslim member, has said that science is a hard subject. Fake science is super easy. Do you feel that sometimes the rejection of the theory of evolution and the sponsorship of the theory of creationism is just part of or a result, a byproduct of the weakness in the science education in general, since the theory of evolution is a complicated science to understand?
Yes and no. I think it's a bit more complicated than that. In this sense, very often, those of us in science and science education, such as myself, our first go-to explanation for a fake science like creationism, we tend to say, oh, it must be a fault of science education. We must be screwing up somehow. But it also is fairly well established that, in fact, science education doesn't really have that much of an effect on things. So there's more to this that's going on in the sense that, for example, when I was growing up in Turkey, I went through the fairly standard science education in public schools in Turkey. And evolution at that point was still in the textbooks. And they didn't spend a lot of time on it or anything like that. They tended to avoid the controversy and everything. But I would have a very hard time saying that the kind of coverage that we had in the science textbooks influenced people's beliefs very much. Because those of my classmates who were conservatively religious, they went home and they were influenced by more religious literature. If it turned out that they belonged to a kind of a religious kind of community where they would hear that evolution is religiously unacceptable, that would be how they would react. Everybody would like to have better science education, but I don't think we should expect too much from it.
Dr. Tanner, what do you think the Catholic Church has come to a point where there is an official, at least, acceptance of the theory of evolution? Why haven't Islamic institutions like Al-Azhar or similar institutions, Islamic universities, come to a point where they announce such an acceptance, although among their academics, it's usually accepted to a certain extent?
Well, okay, there are reasons. One of it is that the authority structure in Sunni Islam is, of course, much more complicated and much more decentralized compared to something like the Catholic Church. That has an effect. So what typically happens with Muslim scholars is that effectively, almost every Muslim country has their own policy, their own government-supported scholars, their own sort of officially endorsed views. And in Turkey, for example, the official line among Muslim scholars has typically been that evolution is to a degree, acceptable. They generally have tended to adopt the guided evolution point of view. They have generally tried to make humans an exception from evolution when they have made it. So it's not evolution as biologists understand it that they support, but they generally have said evolution is okay. They generally have not been supportive of the Harun Yahya style freelance, more almost commercial forms of creationism. And in many other Muslim countries too, if you look at the officially supportive scholars, the equivalence of Al-Azhar in other Muslim countries, typically you'll find, I think, similar pictures. They will tend to say, okay, some degree of evolution is acceptable. But it's, again, because of the more decentralized nature of religious authority in Sunni Islam, that doesn't always necessarily translate into something that will affect every religious community. It doesn't necessarily always affect education. It can be much more complicated than with the Catholic Church.
I want to give an example over here of a Shia authority and then the name of Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Fadlallah, who's considered a more progressive Shia authority in the Shia world. And in the answer to the question about evolution, first of all, he mentions that it's not necessarily against our faith, since at the end, whatever, if we prove that the human have evolved from apes or a different species, at the end we can always relate the first cause to God, so it's not necessarily against our faith. Then he goes to explain a few things that shows he actually does not have a very good understanding of the theory of evolution, because he gives an example of the different stages of the formation of the baby in the womb, which is not necessarily the timeline that evolution is looked at. But at the end of his very long answer, he says that at the end of the day, the theory of evolution contradicts the historical religious truth, because God told us that He created man as a normal human being from the beginning.
Yeah.
I find it that even in his open-minded answer compared to other scholars, and him avoiding to reject the theory of evolution directly, the answer is still conflicted.
Yeah,
it almost contradicts itself. What is the reason for this contradiction within the Islamic institution in dealing with the theory of evolution? In your opinion?
Well, okay, there are multiple reasons. One fairly straightforward reason is that it is very difficult for any conservative monotheism. It's not just a Sunni or Shiite thing. It's not just an Islamic thing. Accepting a full-blown version of Darwinian evolution is always going to be difficult, because it goes a long distance towards emptying the history of life from any sort of intelligent design, any sort of teleology, and so forth. That is going to be unacceptable for any type of monotheism, even if they're not fundamentalists about sacred texts. And if you further then have the situation where sacred texts are taken as the literal divine word, and that text contains stories about Adam and Eve and so forth, which is effectively endorsing a special creationist view of at least humans, then it's going to be very difficult to accept evolution as biologists understand it. You always are going to have to look for some compromise, some way of finding a way of saying, okay, something like evolution happened. There are relationships of common descent between non-human animals. But at the end of the day, it is really a divine design that drives everything. That is going to be very common. And when you're looking at religious scholars, there are extra complications that come in there. And this is something I see not just among Shiite scholars, but also Sunni scholars, at least the ones I'm familiar for in Turkey, that responding to something like evolution doesn't naturally come in the context of the standard education of a religious scholar. Very often I find that when religious scholars have to respond to evolution, They draw on their own rather classic Islamic education, and they tend to interpret evolution in rather archaic terms that are often derived from end of the 19th century sort of progressivism type of notions, which is historically what they've been fighting against. And they still haven't kept up with, say, evolution as it is among biologists today, because that's their intellectual background. And so very often they will talk about evolution and you'll say, okay, this is really, you're talking about a late 19th century idea of progress. You're not talking about biological evolution in the 21st century anymore. But they don't necessarily know that.
Thank you. In another study, Poo study in 2013, it shows that there's an increasing slowly but steadily the acceptance of the theory of evolution. It was in 2013 in Kazakhstan at 79%, in Lebanon at 78%, while it is very low, for example, in Afghanistan, 26%, in Iraq, 27%, with most of the other Islamic countries somewhere in between. Have you taken a look at this, Dr. Duke? Can you relate that variance? It's almost...
some of that is 50%. A bit misleading in the sense that, so for example, your high percentage of acceptance of evolution, those numbers came from Kazakhstan, where a substantial portion of the population is Russian, and from Lebanon, where a substantial portion of the population is Christian. And so these are not really, and they're low population countries, where so therefore you expect more variance. It's, I think, much more representative to talk about high population countries like, say, Indonesia or Pakistan or Turkey or Iran and things like that. And then, of course, it's just basic statistics. You're going to have some regression to the mean over there. But yeah, it's generally people are split on the subject. And it's much more difficult to interpret polling data from Muslim countries. A little while ago, you mentioned researchers in McGill who have been studying this thing for a long time. So when I talked to them, one of the things that they impressed upon me is that it's actually very difficult to do polling on public acceptance of something like evolution in many Muslim countries. There are huge translation difficulties and other issues that don't come up when you're say trying to do the same poll in the United States. In the United States, we know things much more in depth and much more over a much longer time horizon. So we know much more about what's going on in the United States. And even there, we have very high uncertainties. Polls about creationism in the United States are very notorious for, if you change the wording of a question, your percentages of responses can vastly change. It really depends on whether the question, the way you pose it, really elicits people's loyalties to conservative institutions, or if the question is put a different way, the answer can be very different. So I would say we can take these polls from Muslim countries as indicative. They are not worthless. They're better than having nothing. But we also have to be very, very careful in interpreting what they say. We can't really depend too much on them.
Hi, Dr. Tanner. I have a question about sort of extending this issue to deep time, like biological, geological, cosmological deep time into the past, and then looking at that, how it extends into the future. Like if you know, evolution and the you know, changes in the universe since the beginning, all the way leading up to this point, if someone were to accept that, then they could probably accept that in the future as well. Things will, you know, continue on that trajectory. That there will continue to be evolution. Humans, either through CRISPR or some other gene editing techniques, or through natural selection, and other organisms as well, will continue to evolve. And that's not even getting into, you know, the Earth getting roasted by the sun in 5 billion years and everything like that. There's a deep dive into the future as well.
Sure.
So just wondering, like, what creationists kind of Islamic scholars who kind of accept a sort of a synthetic you know, maybe accept like some aspects of evolution, what they might think about going into the future. I mean, this has implications for the Islamic eschatology as well, right?
Like, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Quick answer is actually, I haven't seen a lot of this at all, in the sense that in the sort of popular Islamic apologetics that I've been exploring, particularly in connection with evolution, I haven't seen much of a future perspective at all. And actually, that's an interesting question. I see very little physics in Islamic apologetics at all. And I have things to say about that, particularly because I have a physics background myself, but it will probably be taking us rather off topic. The interesting thing, however, that you brought up is cosmological projections far into the future. And maybe I could say a few things about that, because after all, I'm teaching a cosmology course right now. And the interesting thing, of course, is that if you really start going far into the future, according to current cosmological models, you really get into situations that you're not able to sustain any sort of complex organization of anything. So eventually you're not going to have evolution proceed either. Mm-hmm. And it would be interesting to see, as you say, that somebody would address this in the context of Muslim eschatology and so forth, but I haven't seen any examples. The only examples I've run into with this sort of thing is with people getting into end of the world fantasies and things like that, often in this rather conspiratorial mindset, particularly in Arab countries, and usually there's a anti-Israel, often even anti-Semitic theme running through these things. There's not really much of science at all. So it's a different world that way.
Doctor, we have a question from a viewer, B. Bash. What do you attribute this decline in secularism and rise of creationism in Turkey? And do you see parallels to the to other countries like Malaysia and Indonesia?
Yes. I'll start by saying yes to the parallels. Now, I don't have an easy answer to this. I have a book that came out in 2016, Islam Evolving, which really tries to address questions like this. And what I can conclude from my knowledge is that there's no one single cause. There's a whole bunch of things that are going on. And some of these things are going on are actually kind of independent of what Muslims have been up to entirely. One of the things that has happened since the 1980 or so in Turkey, in Malaysia, in Indonesia in particular, is that there have been Islamist movements who have been very successful in adapting to the more sort of neoliberal turn in politics and economics in the world in general. They have been quicker to adapt. They have been much more successful in plugging into both democratic support due to a kind of religious right-wing populism and getting legitimacy at the elite level as well. So it's a fairly complicated historical and political story that you have to tell. And as I said, I can't point to any one single cause. But yeah, there are definitely parallels in what has happened in Turkey and Malaysia and Indonesia and so forth. In the mid-20th century, people who were observing such countries would have thought that these are sort of gradually, maybe even grudgingly secularizing countries, that probably religion would continue to play a role in the politics of these countries for a long time, but in sort of ever-decreasing ways. But that form of mid-20th century modernization theory in the social sciences has long fallen apart. And it's become fairly clear that countries like Turkey and Malaysia and Indonesia are exceptions to any sort of broad theory of secularization. Now, today, they're examples of desecularization. And as I said, there's a long story to that.
Thank you. Ibrahim Ovadia asks, are you familiar with the work of Dr. Hisham Salam at Mansoura University?
Yeah, I'm afraid not. I probably should be, but I'm afraid not.
Thank you, Doctor. Suhan, any other question?
Oh, I'm just wondering, have there been any Islamic scholars or apologists or such who have been, for lack of a better word, excommunicated on account of being, you know, like trying to make some kind of concordance between Islam and evolution, or even like going full-blown evolution of humans included or something like that? Has there been any accusations of, you know, any takfir sort of thing going on there?
Not anything at a large scale. You occasionally run into news reports of, say, an imam running into problems with his congregation because he endorsed evolution and the congregation didn't want it. Every few years you will hear about it, especially with Muslim communities in Western countries. Sometimes that runs problem. That's actually an interesting observation. Sometimes immigrant Muslim communities can be even more conservative than Muslims in Muslim countries. So depending on your congregation, whether it's more liberal or more conservative, sometimes there have been issues like that, yes. But I don't know of anything that has escalated to the level of takfir or anything like that. It's mainly been small incidents.
Doctor, the fact that you mentioned that in 2017, Turkey announced plans to end the teaching of evolution before the university level, is that still holding on in Turkey?
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
Do you see any end to it? Is there any challenge to it in the parliament? Or
it all depends on political developments. The current Islamist political party in charge, which has been in power for 20 years right now, is also kind of exhausted itself. At some point, they're going to lose an election and they're going to lose it badly. However, they have also managed to transform the politics of the country so much that anybody who's going to replace them is probably going to follow more or less similar policies. They might be a little bit more moderate in culture war issues, and so they might not be quite as opposing of evolution in things like education. But I would expect to see only small changes in the future.
I have a final question, Doctor, because we're coming to an end to the program. Dr. Rana Dijani, and she is going to be our guest on March 19 at 1 p.m. our time. She says that in her classroom, when she teaches the theory of evolution, that almost all of her students are hostile to the idea when she starts teaching it at the beginning of the class. By the end of the class, the majority accepts the idea of evolution. Nevertheless, they still don't accept it when it comes to humans. I was discussing with a friend, a Muslim friend, this issue, a devout Muslim. And he says God describes how perfect and beautiful did he create the human being. And the theory of evolution shows that the beginning was not that great.
Fair enough.
As a matter of fact, and I say that, not him, a human being is still not impressive to a biologist or a scientist in general. How can we reconcile that? So if, let's say, a devout Muslim asks you if they can reconcile the theory of evolution when it comes to humans with his faith that a human being is such a great creation. Is there a way to reconcile that?
It's a hard question for me because, I mean, I'm not a devout Muslim. It's not something that bothers me. When I look at something like that, if it doesn't seem reconcilable, so it isn't reconcilable. No big deal. I move on. But if, of course, you have a faith commitment that there must be some sort of reconciliation, you've got a difficult problem on your hands. And I don't really know how I can help.
How much does science gives certainty for a person that they have to question their faith when faced with the facts of science?
Well, I will turn that around in the sense that I wouldn't say so much that necessarily science gives you a sense of uncertainty, is that maybe one of the things that science really can do for us is to help us manage uncertainty. There is an immense amount of uncertainty in science and in life and everything like that. And if you're in science for a long enough time, you tend to accept that a lot of what we're saying is uncertain to us to a degree. And much of what we're doing is to try and manage that uncertainty without falling into an unjustified sense of confidence. So if the issue is having certainty, again, I would maybe suggest that that's asking for the wrong thing. It's not something certainly that science can give you. You learn to be more comfortable with not knowing everything absolutely, and that's fine.
And
especially
we,
in these times, that's useful. In these pandemic times.
Yeah.
Right. Professor, I'm sorry, I have to ask one more question.
Go ahead.
It was inspired by Sohan. As far as the pandemic was really a manifestation of the theory of evolution on our daily life. Do you feel that scientists could have used that better to actually make people understand the theory of evolution?
Maybe, but again, as I kind of hinted at before, I don't think the main problem with evolution is people not understanding evolution. I have run into people who understand perfectly well what evolution is about, and that's exactly why they find it unacceptable. It's not just a knowledge issue. Very often, especially from the point of view of a rather devout monotheistic believer, evolution is almost morally offensive to some people. And that's very hard to get around. So I can't double back and say, oh, okay, here's this extra bit of evidence, here is another fossil, here is another thing, because that's not the issue anymore. And I don't really know what to do then.
As a scientist, all you have to do is provide your findings and provide the facts, and people can philosophize that as they wish, correct?
Yes.
With that, we come to an end to our Muslimish broadcast. We thank Dr. Taner Idiss so much for this opportunity to celebrate Darwin's Day with an enlightening lecture about the Islamic creationism, the Turkish model. Thank you, Professor. Thank you, Sohan. Thank you for all the people who have watched and followed this program. Thank you for all the comments. And I'm sorry if we couldn't get to some of them. And we hope to see you in the next Muslimish broadcast. We're going to continue on the topic of evolution with Professor Rana Dijani, who is on the list of the 100 most influential women in the Muslim world. That's a 1.6 billion people, among which she was listed as one of the most influential women. So we hope that you will join us for that episode to continue the conversation that we have started last time. We continued with Dr. Idiss, and we will continue with Dr. Dijani, and have a great night.
Thank you, Professor.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Muslimish Freethinkers. Do let us know what you think of this episode at facebook.com/Muslimish. Don't forget to visit us at muslimish.org.